All right, what's up? Thank you so much for tuning in to the Pause, Rewind, Play podcast. As you can tell, this week we're talking about The Last of Us, the HBO series, highlighting the video game of the same name, I think, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm not even a gamer. Paige over here is a big gamer. I know that.
Oh, love it.
Love it. I'm not a gamer. I can play Halo still, though.
Hey.
Hand and foot. That's how I play. But anyhow, so, yeah, welcome to the podcast. We're back this week again to talk movies and, obviously, a TV series. However, let's start with what we've been up to. We got to make this brief. We got a huge cast tonight. We got two guests, actually.
We got Megadesk going and a Megacast.
Megadesk, Megacast.
Why don't we start with the guests?
Yeah, let's start with the guests. Sorry. So, I'm going to start with the end. I don't remember the person sitting next to me's name. I apologize. But let's start with Paige. Hi.
Well, I'm Paige. I am Vince's sister. Just happy to be here. Super fan of the game. I'm just happy you guys are wanting to talk about it because I could talk about it for days.
Hyped.
A little bit closer into the mic, but that's perfect.
Okay.
Yeah. Hi. You did great.
My name is Paige. Okay, cool.
Yeah, no. So you're an avid player of the game.
Yeah, I've played through it like probably 5 times.
So do you, well, we're not getting into the podcast yet, but for viewers to know, do you have a very strong opinion about how this TV series should go?
Yes, but I'm also very open-minded because I feel like they know what they're doing.
Okay. So you trust them.
I trust them 100%.
If you were to offer them a pinky promise and say, I trust you, you'd feel confident doing that.
Yes, okay. I would do a trust fall with them any day.
Wow. That's 2 thumbs up. I love it.
I was a little worried with like the second game, but then the payoff was just like, I'm good. I'll trust you. I'm here for the ride. Let's do it.
I love it. We're seatbelted in and ready to go. All right. Sorry, I forgot. What's your name again?
Alice.
Okay, Alice, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
No problem.
You also
are happy to be here.
Paige's friend and Vince's friend.
I am Paige's best friend, often confused for her lover.
I'm sorry. I'm going to be this guy. Just talk closer into the mic. Tell him you're the Paige's lover again.
I think I'm actually good now. Yeah, I'm Paige's friend. Know Vince through Paige.
Okay. Oh.
No.
I just realized why I can't hear you.
Yeah, she's not connected.
You're not on
to
the same thing as
I was going to say something. Oh, so you, we're kind of going crazy. This is our first time doing more than 4 people, right?
Yeah.
So Vince, Jimmy rigged Alice into her own personal microphone and computer.
Oh my goodness.
So
I feel like an outsider still.
like if you were Tom Hanks and this was Castaway, you'd be Wilson.
I would be Wilson. Well, yeah. I mean, did it not bring you to tears?
Yes.
When I die, I bring the whole audience to tears.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Do that, motherfucker.
But you also get the raddest hair in the whole entire cast.
Yes,
so
I do. Yes.
There you go.
Some palm leaves up in that joint. Anyways, yeah. So I know Paige. I am not a gamer.
Okay.
I am not a gamer whatsoever. However, I did have a former lover, you might say, that
okay.
was very into gaming. And he's the one that kind of introduced me to the story of Last of Us. But I can say that I watch more TV than I think of anyone that I know.
Okay.
So TV is my jam.
So for you, thus far into the story of this, do you feel confident that this is warming up to be a good series?
Oh, I knew like within probably the first like half hour, maybe 15 minutes, I was like, yeah, this is solid.
Dang.
And it's Pedro.
Yeah.
Right?
You mean
wrong, Pedro.
Everyone's daddy. Like he is daddy and it is a state of mind, but also it's a state of life for him.
Amen. Like he can do no wrong in my eyes. The only thing I want him to bust out just a little bit is a little bit of his Oberon accent.
Ooh.
And just go a little.
Well, wait, I don't remember what he says.
You killed my sister.
I think he just has a standard Chilean accent on in that. I don't know. But
yeah.
You feel like it's good TV?
No, I'm loving it. And it's cool because I'm not super into zombies, right? Like I'm not into the Walking Dead. I've never seen that, but tell us how you really feel.
I like Walking Dead.
Yeah, so I'm not really into zombies, but I was really excited for this show to come out just because I knew about the story and I knew that it was like exquisite storytelling.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm hyped as well. So we'll get into more of the nitty gritty, but thank you for sharing your kind of opening thoughts.
Of course.
All right, Josh. Hi.
Hello. I'm Josh.
I'm our standard cast members, as always.
I'm Josh. I am a gamer, but more so in the recent years, and I'm just more into like first-person shooter, like multiplayer games. And so I never played The Last of Us, and it's only more recently that I'm getting into more single player more, storytelling game. I play like The Long Dark, like stuff like that, you know, which is like a survival game. But and so I haven't played The Last of Us, but I knew about it and I knew that it's kind of like has this spot in the gaming world, right? As this like beautiful story, this game that people always fawn over. And so when they announced the series, I was like, awesome. I learned like that the series was going to happen. I was like, oh, I should play the game before then. And then time passed, and then they're like, the first episode's next week. I was like, well, maybe I'll play the games after the first season then, because I just kind of wanted to go along with the story, so no spoilers for what happens in the future, the end of The Last of Us, since we're obviously only partway through,
yeah. But
I'm super excited. And
I will try. I know this story, like... Oh, okay.
I'm so excited. Yeah. So let's just, I'm excited for it, and I'm excited that we're talking about it, because it's... I definitely am one of those people who just hates like the week by week releases of like TV shows. I don't handle it very well. I'm like the person who will like wait until like The White Lotus. So I wasn't in The White Lotus season one, and then halfway through season two. Exactly. But and so I was like, my buddy finally convinced me to watch it, and I was like, okay, I'll watch it in 4 weeks when it's like done, and I can just watch it through. This show has done it for me. I'm there every week, nice. Like Sunday night. I'm like, yes.
Except Friday this time. Week.
Except Woo! For, yes, Friday this week because they're releasing it early.
To avoid the giant bowl.
The giant bowl. Patent pending.
You want to get sued.
So I'm excited.
Don't want to get sued, guys. So it's the giant bowl. As could be said. The giant object the giant instead.
Feet. Ball. Balls of feet.
Balls of feet. Oh, that's balls dangerous. This is starting to get into my dad wrote a porno territory. So let's jump over to Vince. Vince, tell me, like, how are you feeling about this series so far?
Well, first off, I have to share something. I fell down the stairs today.
What?
Almost twice.
How did I not hear this?
It was outside on the deck.
Oh,
I fell flat on my ass and slid down like six stairs.
That's a lot of stairs.
So which cheek is more tender?
It's my left butt cheek. It's a little bit bruised.
What kind of noises did you make?
I think I cussed. I think I pretty much was like, oh shit. And just like,
I bet Mac loved it.
I know. What did Mac do?
It's the one time in my life that I wish that I wasn't cheap and paid for a subscription for my camera, because I would have gotten it perfect. I even went up and I like signed up for it for the, like the week long trial just to see if I could download it. Didn't have it there. I was so sad. And so I laughed at myself and I was like, this is going to be a story.
That's a good story.
And then I went back outside again. And just about did it, like, right or, like, 10 minutes later.
I think Daniel Day-Lewis will play you in this movie. My left butt cheek.
It's going to be a musical.
And it'll start out like, my left butt cheek when I fell down the stairs.
Is it numb?
Does he have bruising? Is it black? Is it blue?
His coccyx.
Exactly, just like that. That will be the musical of your life.
Love it.
I fell down the stairs. The tale of Vince Bradley.
So anyway,
sorry to laugh.
That happened to me today. No, it was funny. I've been waiting to tell somebody all day. I literally have been. I'm just like,
save it for the pod.
Oh, our pants and my pants and your jacket.
Yeah. So I wore my. I'm trying to. Like bring in my inner Joel by wearing my most jacket I could.
Like you were walking by and I was gonna say it, but then you had to do something with the camera. But I was gonna say it's like you look very Joel-esque.
Thank you. The only thing I'm missing is the plaid shirt underneath.
Yep. Mm.
And maybe a backpack to go on back.
Maybe.
Me and Paige back in 2013 when the first game came out.
Something like that.
The very, very, very first Salt Lake Comic Con.
Me and now FanX, right?
Yeah, FanX now. Whatever. Me and Paige cosplayed as Joel and Ellie.
Wow. Great.
For the thing. So I actually.
That's called supporter life, actually, on this podcast, so we don't get sued. I'm just kidding. Sorry. Huh? A supporter life instead of FanX is supporter life, so like we don't get sued.
I'm sorry.
It went over your head.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I don't know all these things.
Supporter life. I'm like fan, supporter, X. Life.
Words.
X means death. More dirty things.
Ooh. Fell on his coccyx.
The coccyx I'm keeping up. For days. Also, Really quickly, do you guys want to know something crazy about this universe and this world? Right, this happened in 2004 was when this thing started, the outbreak of whatever. I think so. Sorry,
we spoiler. It was the same year as Underworld.
Underworld
and Matchstick Men. Oh my god! Yes, you saw it at the theater.
The billboard of the theater. I love doing that in movies. Whenever there's a theater in the background, you look and see what's playing.
I didn't even see that. I didn't see that. That's such a fun thing.
Because they do it in the first It movie as well. I don't remember which ones
they do.
Are there.
Yes, they do. I remember now.
But it's always fun to see like which movie the directors like choose, because you know it has some kind of meaning to them for that year. You know.
Yeah.
So apparently, Matchstick Men and Underworld for some reason they're into those two.
Well, I mean Nicolas Cage. Right? Matchstick Men.
And Kate Beckinsale. She's good.
I mean, there's the connection there. Pedro, Nicholas.
They did that movie together.
Oh, right. This last year.
Yeah.
The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Yeah. I believe it's called. Exactly. I didn't watch it.
Maybe that's their little. We saw it. You're a national treasure, Kate.
Oh, no.
Welcome to our zombie world.
Do you know what happened, though, in this universe? Because it happened in 2004, they did not get a See Shrek 2.
Lucky them.
Are you kidding me?
Stop.
Yeah.
Shrek is like one of the underrated Shrek series. Two, I swear. So we watched Shrek.
We can't do this again.
So do you want to know something? I pulled this out just to bring it in another episode.
Oh my gosh.
Do you guys hate me yet? Because I had to do it. Thank you for saying that.
No, I 100%. I like Shrek 2 more than Shrek 1.
Get out.
It's so good.
Just leave.
No, I'm not. I will not.
Your invitation is rescinded. I'm just kidding.
Mid episode.
Just take away my microphone because I have nothing else to take away. So.
No, that's amazing. I'm glad people like the Shrek movies as well. But we'll move on. I'm sorry, Vince. I just had to throw you in there because Vince does not love the Shrek universe. However, Vince, you got movie deets for us. Tell me the words.
Yes. So, I mean, I didn't get a lot.
Series deets. I apologize.
I didn't pull up a lot. I just got the basics. So written and directed, or written by Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin. I always destroy the names every time we attempt to do this, so...
You're doing great.
Written by Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin, starring Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey and a bunch of other people. Based on The Last of Us Part 1, released in 2013. Let's do it. That's all I got.
Let's do it!
Do it.
Got all a bunch of other people in it, directed by a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
The end.
Cool. Well, let's start with the first off, guys. No spoilers, right?
No spoilers.
Only
I'm looking at the cross
four
here.
Episodes.
Yeah, only for the first four episodes. No ending series, what's going to happen, spoilers. But we can talk about what's happening. Sorry, I said that backwards. Strike that, reverse it type thing, Willy Wonka. But you can do spoilers. We're in spoilers territory is what I meant to say, right?
Yeah. The already happened spoilers.
Yeah, already happened.
Up to episode four.
Yep, up to episode four.
Yeah.
Because that's where we're at right now.
Because it won't let me watch anymore.
Yeah. Unless you're a hacker and can hack into the back end.
Have people done that yet?
I bet you that people, they probably don't even upload it.
It's probably.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Probably they don't.
It's not hackable.
Because it probably would be hackable, but that's why they probably don't. Like, they have, like, a few copies or something, and then they just, like, right before it's supposed to go live, upload it. So maybe you can get it, like, 30 minutes early
or something. So are you saying they just have a random thumb drive somewhere where all the weight
of the
HBO network is weighing on this one thumb drive, and they're like...
Each episode has an individual thumb drive inside a briefcase, handcuffed to the head of HBO.
Like the Oscar winners.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Oh, I thought you said Oscar Mayer wieners.
Like the Oscar Mayer wieners.
Oscar winners.
Do you
guys
keep your wieners in a locked case?
I'm thinking about hot dogs, guys.
Speaking of to the boy side of the table.
Oh, gosh. But anyhow, let's get going. Let's talk about
this. We didn't plan that out.
No.
You two decided you wanted to sit next to each other. We didn't want to sit next to you, so it worked out.
Someone here has bad gas, and it's this side of the table. Just kidding.
I did have Taco Bell.
The pug
Oh, yeah, he's around. He's underneath me.
He's on their side of the table. Anyhow, who wants to dive into episode one? Who's got some thoughts on episode one and kind of wants to
talk about that. Let's start with, like, favorite episodes. Is anybody's favorite episode one?
I think mine is still.
It's tied between one and four. I really loved the most recent one.
Really?
I did.
Why?
I just feel like we're starting to get more Joel. And I just love seeing that relationship. Like, this is the beginning of their relationship. Like, it's blossoming. Yeah. And it fills my heart with joy.
Joel joy.
Joel joy.
What did you like about the first one then? Like, why is it like kind of going back and forth? Like, you like number four because you're finally seeing them like come out of their shells and like start to like each other a little bit. Well, be a little more forgiving.
Episode one is just so pivotal. Like, it just, that's when everything just starts. Like, that's where you start to get Joel, his trauma, and that's just, like, such a powerful moment. Like, I still can't play through the game without getting, like, watery-eyed. Like, it's just so well done, and he did so good with it. And I just love the development of the beginning, how we just had time to, like, meet the neighbors, you know? Then just, like, it just was everything that I wanted. You know, I just wanted more of that universe, more of these characters, and I got exactly that.
It was like all the DLCs of your dreams.
Yes. And then I just
wait,
like,
neighbors? Wait, an old
what's
lady?
What's a DLC? I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh, wait. Did I just drop?
Look at you.
What?
A gamer.
Downloadable content.
DLC is like a paid extra for a game that you have.
Oh, so like a skin like in like Fortnite type thing. Is
yeah. Not really. So it's like, imagine if you had like a Halo DLC, it's like there's like new maps, right?
Okay.
And it's like if you want to play these maps when you're playing Halo, you have to pay extra and do that.
Okay.
Not a lot of games do that anymore. But
the last Halo game I played all the way through was like Halo 4, so it's been a long time. So, okay, cool. Good to know. So, thank you. Cool.
Episode 1 is definitely up there for me. It's not my favorite one, but what I love about Episode 1 is, and just about this show in general, is how amazing they do at setting the tone and how atmospheric it is, right? So, like, I'll mention it another time, right? Like the very beginning of Episode 1, but just since we're already talking about Joel and all this stuff that's happening, they really do such an incredible job at just having that eerie atmosphere of, you know, stuff's about to happen. Just her being at the neighbor's house and the not in focus grandmother in the background doing freaky ass shit. Like
that moment made me question, like, can I handle this? Because I don't do horror well, and I'm like, oh no.
That is actually true. You are terrible with horror.
I was watching.
I know this from years ago.
I know, yeah. Unless she's so in control bad. Of it with the controller.
Even still.
I think I watched you play Dead Space. At one
I had
point
to play that with the, in the daylight with the lights on and the windows open.
I remember this
in the front room with people.
Yeah, I feel like I was just like a passenger in you playing this game at one point in time.
My mom
like
hated it. She called it roadkill.
Yeah. Well, going to really quickly the first episode. I love the first episode because it really set the tone of what's going on. Right, like it set the year. It set kind of the experience. What was happening? It showed us like the variety of things. So first off, one, we have stuff happening in Indonesia, right? That is talking about, hey, this is what's going on. And I love that part, actually, because I think that it was cool that, one, they did it in the Indonesian language. I think that's pretty cool when they bring
in. I think that was the second episode, right?
Is it? Am I?
Yeah, that's
so they
one.
Bring up, oh, so you hear
sorry.
On the that's radio bad. That, like, stuff's happening in Indonesia in the first line.
Yeah, okay, sorry. I get it's
But that's the cold open of the second
I'm sorry,
one.
But yes, but really quickly, I guess the thing is, what I was trying to get to here is there were three or four times that actually Joel and his daughter could have been exposed to the virus. And one is like getting the cake. Two is like getting the biscuits in the morning. Three is like the cookies that they made. And four, I can't remember.
There's pancakes.
The pancakes. Yes, thank you. But I was like, what an interesting thing that they like set it up, like such an opportunistic thing. And somehow this small group avoids it completely. And they did a great job. Yes, I guess if we're looking at DLC of the neighbors and the family and all that, good job. I thought it was a great way to set up the show. And
well, I'm right there with you. This has been my favorite thing about the show. Like most video game adaptations, we can agree are not good. Like with the exception of maybe the Doom one with The Rock, right?
I was thinking Warcraft.
Street Fighter?
Casey, you love Warcraft.
I'm sorry,
Warcraft,
can I insert Mortal Kombat into this? Just kidding.
No, but really, like this is the first adaptation that, I mean, other than like maybe like for real, I would consider the Castlevania anime was actually really good. I don't really play Castlevania, but I enjoyed that one. But this is the first like live action video game series that I've ever seen that's actually been like really I am drawn towards. And my favorite thing about this one is how much they take inspiration from the video game itself and actually use lines from the video game. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting there, us who have played the game, and we're quoting the lines along with the characters as it goes through.
Like
so
almost right
times.
Before they say it. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Just so many times, especially throughout that first episode.
Well, I think that's a nod to the writing as well. When you are able to go through it, and you know that like whole joke when you're watching like a show with somebody and they're just constantly asking questions and you're just like, you know, they make movies so that when you watch it the first time, you'll still figure everything out. Like, so you'll be okay. I love that they are not feeling like they need to just give us everything all at once. So I loved that in the first episode and actually watching it again, because they don't reveal anything about the flower and it being spread through that until the second episode. And so it's when you think back. And so that's what I am really liking about this, that they don't feel the need to rush and give us everything all at once and really take their time with it.
And then they even explore it again in episode three, you know, like they get the idea where, oh, maybe it came through flower. And then in number three, Ellie's asking him questions. Mm-hmm. And it's like for a week you sit there and you're watching the internet and everyone is asking like, oh, if it goes through flowers, what doesn't make sense? Like the heat would, when you cook stuff, would kill it or something. The next episode comes out, they answer that question for you. Like they've thought this through pretty well. And that's what I'm loving about it. Like me and Paige, we've played through this game so many times. We know it very, very well, especially that first, like, 2 hours of the game, because we have shown that first scene up to Sarah's death so many times to so many people, because it's such a powerful, powerful scene that, like I said, we can like quote it, but they're taking these things and they're expanding the world and they're expanding the universe and they're answering questions that I never even really thought to ask. Like I knew that there was a pandemic or whatever and that the fungus spread and everyone got sick through pollen. What is it? Spores, right? Spores. In the game, it's spores.
Well, it's still from contaminated crops in the game. There's a newspaper. Okay. In the beginning of the game that you can find as Sarah going through Joel's room.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, did I find that?
It's from South America, though, not Jakarta. I found that. Yeah.
I've played through it for an hour.
Yeah, she played through the beginning.
And let's just say that I died at the first opportunity and passed the remote for the rest of it.
I got you, girl.
But that's really what it's doing. Like, it's taking this source material and expanding on it in a way that makes it so enjoyable to us. So it's not just like we're replaying the game over again. Mm. They're expanding this world and they're answering questions. And that's why, for me, episode one, probably episode two is my favorite. There's more than just this reason for episode two, but like it expands this way and it goes to different parts of the world that you never explore or you never go to in The Last of Us, because it's so character focused and so focused on, you know, Joel and Ellie and what they're doing in the U.S. So you don't know if it's affecting the rest of the world or if it's just affecting this place. And I frankly never thought to ask, because I was just so compelled by the story that they're telling. I was just like, I don't really need it right now. I can answer those questions later. And then when it doesn't answer it, I was so satisfied by the overall story that I never thought to go back and question those things.
I, as a newcomer to this whole thing, actually loved how they were sharing that it was a bigger thing, that it was a bigger issue. Because a lot of times I feel like series are very focused on what's happening right here, right now. And maybe that's the way it is in the game, and maybe that's purposefully designed or built, right? But like the way it felt was a big enough issue that this is a worldwide problem and a worldwide thing that's happening. Oh, hello. I picked up the pug, guys. I'm sorry. I just really love the pug.
I want to know, you guys who have not seen or never played the game, I want to know your feelings, your reaction, how hard you cried.
Oh, to the first? Intro,
in that first.
Well, I guess we can get to Casey. I'll do mine pretty quick, because that was like one of the things that I didn't know how it went down or anything like that, that I knew was coming, right? Just because, just from hearing stuff that people said about the game and also knowing that Pedro Pascal stars in this with Bella Ramsey, I was like, you had to know that this was like short-lived.
Spoilers right. From the get-go.
Exactly, right? Like, you know that like they're building this up and they're building this character, and even though you're following this character, which is what I believe you do in the game, right? You play like as Sarah at the beginning, right? It's just like, it's, you dive in and you love her character, and it's like I could just feel, I was like, I know like something bad is coming, I don't know what, but it's like I know it's coming. And so it was truly like emotional. I definitely like was like tearing up a bit. It was tear jerking. It was so emotional, just that moment where like you know that something's happened, you don't know what, and he goes over to her, and from, because after, you know, I started watching all these YouTube videos, and even though I didn't want the game spoiled, I just wanted to like see some things, and they do like the side by sides, and I love how they do some of their stuff their own way, but they pull some shots that it's literally just
it's framed straight the exact same way
from the game. The way he pulls over and looks over her, the way the blood looks on her shirt, how she's holding her stomach and stuff like that, and it's just done so perfectly, but so emotionally, and just the way he holds her, it's
heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking, and it's like, as terrible as it sounds, it's like beautiful at the same time, right? Like that moment that you can never change, that's like the pivotal moment of your life, is just so sad.
I was not prepared. I didn't watch any spoilers. I didn't watch anything to tease this show. I didn't watch a damn thing. I just showed up with a drink and I was like, let's do this. Yeah, I should have brought a tissue box instead of a soda, but like, I was not prepared for that. Okay, I didn't know that she was going to...
I'm so glad that was your experience.
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
That was kind of mine with the game. I briefly looked at the cover. I was like, oh, there's a kid. Cool. Didn't look at the hair color or anything else. And then that happened. I'm like, why?
Oh, there's a kid.
Cool. Especially because you think, like, if you don't know, it's like, oh, he's doing this with his daughter.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I was expecting.
And then it's like, wah, wah, not really.
Well, and I'm thinking here it's going to be like the three amigos, the dad, the brother, and the daughter. I'm like, oh, it'll be like a little family adventure, like some sort of zombie land per se, right? And no, it is not. And it is, ouch. That's all I have to say. And I'm not like not to be like crazy and sharing too much. I'm like a new dad. And I was like, like that was what I felt, and I was like, this is painful. And but also like going to Josh, like the beauty of it all, like there is, like it's really hard to say this when you're going through it personally, but there is beauty in tragedy, right? Like there, if it's well written, like we love books, we love movies, we love stories that have a tragic arc and something that really like is the moment that hits and then spirals the rest of the film out. So it's done well.
I mean, that's like the basic structure of storytelling is catharsis.
Yes.
So there you go.
Good call out. Yeah, yeah.
You felt it. You felt it.
I felt it in my freaking core.
As a viewer.
I had a few friends that I showed the game to. Tim, specifically Tim Kerr. You know him.
Yeah.
Who I showed that scene to, and he's just like, what the heck are you making me play? Like, why did you just put me through this?
I can't do that.
Do you know that was so interesting too? So after watching the first episode, I went to Paige and Vince and I said, okay, maybe I'll try it. And of course I just sucked ass. But at the same time, it was so interesting because take Ellie in the game says, is it in the city? Like she's concerned about it. Like the pandemic happening in the city.
Yeah.
And so, oh, wait, what did I say, Ellie?
Yeah.
Sorry, Sarah, the daughter.
Yeah.
She's worried about it being in the city. And she just says it, like, is it in the city? But then they brought in a whole side story into the TV show where she's like concerned because she just spent all day in the city. And I love that little detail. And I feel like that's what takes like really like masterful but really respectful writing is to take something like that and then also to be able to turn it into something that's really gonna like make us worried and feel for these characters right off the bat.
Well, I think with that type of thing, you can't just expect to take everything and then like be like, we're gonna change it, right? Like there's this actually like this thing called stealing like an artist, right? Where you see something good. Yeah. I give one or three of these books away every year.
It's pretty crazy. Like far less of a poser every time.
Yeah. Don't be a poser. Still like an artist. But yeah, there's this thing where you can take what is like a really good section and you can be like, how could we expand on this? How could we develop the story out a little bit more? And then you build that little arm, but then you loop it back into the original story, right? And so great, great art and great like presentation is done in a way that's like, oh, that focus that you're talking about, I didn't know this was a thing. I just knew that because I watched it in the series, she was concerned because she'd been at the Watchmen all day, like getting stuff fixed and doing these things. And she's like, oh, crap, like what if I've been exposed? And like these people are like closing up their doors and whatnot. So beautifully done. Good call out. I like that. Who's next? Who's got something to say?
Someone?
Well, I mean, if we want to kind of bridge it over to episode two, we can kind of talk about the cold opens, right, for both episodes and the world building and the atmosphere setting that it does, right? And the just almost horror that it puts you in, right? Like you're like, you know, like everyone's like Googling afterwards, like, is this fungus real? Like all this stuff.
Yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
Because that first cold open, right? Like imagine like like as someone who either plays the game or even if you don't, right? You go into it and you just see this thing from back then and you're just like, wait, what? Like, did I click on the right thing? Like,
the old school search engine, right, is what that is.
But yeah, so just basically like they go in and this cold open, they're like, it's just one of those talk shows, you know, where they're like, oh, like we like to keep it light and all this stuff. And they're just talking. And the one guy just goes into this whole monologue about this fungus that can't do this thing right now. But if it could.
In 20 years.
We're screwed.
Yeah.
You know, like what if, and they keep it super topical, right? They're like, what if the world got warmer and this was forced to change and all this stuff happened, right? Stuff that obviously we in the future from them know are things that happen. Like, what if it happened? Then we lose. We can't do anything about it. There's no cure. There's not one. You can't even make one. Everyone dies.
Well,
nothing happens. And they're just like, all right, here's the show. Like,
yeah, that interview was done in like the 60s, right? Is when it was kind of presented. So, sorry, I thought that was actually a really cool thing. I got our cold opens confused. Sorry, I've been watching a lot of late night TV. But that was actually really cool. I like that kind of forecasting in that way, like foretelling, whatever it is, like where you're talking.
Foreshadowing,
thank you. Where it's just kind of like, this is the issue. This is what's happening. It's like that what if thing, right? Marvel's what if, but this is like the what if of science and fungi.
It's something that they don't have time to do in the video games either. Like the video game establishes that story kind of in an opening montage of credits. And that's the extent of what you get is just like a bunch of radio recordings about, you know, the government attacking or bombing and riots. Wow. And then all of a sudden you're just thrown into Boston, right? Mm-hmm. And into the game. And then you're learning more and more about the world through the gameplay and seeing the things like written on the walls or like noticing people talking or something like that. It doesn't have the ability to take the time to sit down and like explain to you.
Right.
This is what could happen.
Because it would just take you very far out of the video game to like do a cutscene of like a talk show or something like that.
And then bringing in like the beauty of that, like you can see all the thematic elements that went into that cold opening. Because if you notice from the very beginning to the end, it's getting closer and closer and closer and closer into his face. And so it really, like you said, is really setting the mood for just like foreboding. Like it's like something is coming and it's going to be shitty.
It's so, all of them are so atmospheric. And so like you have the opening of the cold opening of the second episode, which is also good. But just like right before we get that, since we're about to jump off episode one, I also feel that the end of episode one, right? There's like so many things that happen and we just can't talk about all of them, but just that last shot, not the last shot, because the last shot of the first episode is the radio with the 80s playing. But right before that, actually it might be. I don't remember the exact order, but when you get that pan of them walking out into the city and it pans up and it's dark and it's rainy and then the lightning hits and so you see these buildings with the plants and trees growing everywhere and you just get that sense of like, oh my gosh, like this is the world that they're walking into and it's so like beautiful but also daunting and all this stuff and it just sets the mood for, it gives you that, oh, like this is going to be good, right? So
can I ask a dumb question? The radio... Was that from Frank?
Yes.
Is that what we know from? Okay.
Yeah.
So
they answered it in episode 3. It's just kind of like thrown out there comment
right.
Where it's just like, oh, it was still on autoplay. And that's
That's right. Okay, like, I remember now. Okay, thank you. Sorry.
He was like, if he didn't reset it after a little while,
then it would go to danger.
Then it would play the
80s playlist. Okay, thank you. Sorry. Yeah.
Right. So I remember that. So do that. And then the cold open of the second episode, right? I was like almost hoping.
Loved it.
I know a lot of people talked about it and you just can't, like, I mean, maybe you could, but you can't really. I was like hoping for maybe one of these, like every episode, you know, because it would have been so cool. But I understand like why you couldn't. But the cold open of the second episode, it opens and we're in Jakarta, which I hadn't thought about until like I heard someone talk about. Yeah. Like they mentioned on the radio the day before, right? Like I should have, or the episode before, and I should have known. As like kind of a place of origin or stuff like that. And they bring this scientist to this place and just, they establish her very quickly as a subject matter on the expert or as a subject expert on the matter. And when you just see her fear looking at the person, examining them, running out of the room and then talking to this guy, her shaking, not being able to hold her tea glass. And then just that menacing, like, oh, what should we do? Boom.
Bomb everything.
Everything.
I'd like to go home with my family now.
No, exactly. That's just another thing that just sets the tone of that just foreboding, daunting, and just completely terrifying reality that's about to take hold of the entire world.
And well, I love that it wasn't like a military person being like, oh, we need to bomb the city. It's like a scientist. You know? Yeah, it's yeah. like, and the military guys are kind of just like, this is our only hope. What? You know, like, yeah. bomb the city that we're living in right now.
We kind of find out later that it would have happened no matter what with the food supply and everything going out. But as far as people being in close proximity to each other, sure. Indonesia is like a medium-ish island. As far as islands go, it's pretty big. But as far as population, there's over 100 million people that live in Indonesia. Like, it's a very large population country for fairly small landmass. Like, I think other than India and a couple others, it's the most highly densely populated place in the world. And so for something like this to start there as well is...
Fun fact about Jakarta, it's actually sinking right now, and they're moving their capital to a different place.
Because of all the fungus. It's pulling it down.
Okay, that is my... I feel like... Vince and Paige are probably going to cut me for this, but that's like my one critique of this whole thing is that I don't super buy that with a fungal like infection epidemic pandemic that also creates a killer that can also spread it. I don't super – and if you look at the first episode, the amount of bodies that they're burning on a regular basis, how is there, like, anything left to even, like, have this quarantine in? So it to me, it feels like – I brought up Planet of the Apes, that it almost feels like that after 20 years, the only people that should be left are the people that are immune to it.
I actually listened to, I don't remember who I told about this already, but I actually listened to an actual epidemiologist talk about this kind of stuff, and she actually brought that up.
Did she?
Where she's just like, you know, if this thing really wanted to survive, it wouldn't be trying to kill all of its food source so quickly, you know, where it would kind of like pace it out a little bit. So she was kind of said that same thing. Like, there's a little bit of a plot hole there where right. it's trying to spread and spread and spread as much as possible, as fast as possible. But if it did that, then it eventually it's going to kill itself.
I just feel like everyone would be infected, you know, by then, especially.
But there were moments when it spread like, through like that's airborne spores. That's one thing that they brought up in this last episode, like when they went to the campground to sleep, mm-hmm. and she was worried about a clicker coming to get her, and, right. and he was just like, "Oh no, we're too far out; they're not going to be around here." Like, so really, they're just kind of like
they're in population
in
centers.
The populated areas, okay. staying in those populated areas. So maybe people are finding ways to survive outside of the cities, mm. encampments, that kind of stuff.
I actually have a question about this. So the fungus and the people who become the fungus people, whatever they are, zombies, clickers. They like clickers. Okay.
Runners,
so
bloaters.
Stalkers.
Rat kings.
There's lots of, there are Chandlers. Many names Chandlers. For all the zombies in case
Let's
you didn't
Let's call them
know.
Zombies who have no names. Then we can move forward with
just
our
call,
day.
Call them clickers.
The infected.
Clickers, okay,
call
the infected.
Toadstools.
Clickers. Toadstool people. But my question is like, why do they chalk out like that? Like they dry out and wither out. Is it because they're not getting any like...
Like, well, if you notice in episode 2,
uh-huh.
They're looking out over the city and they see all those bodies up against the wall and they're just kind of watching them like roll around and like writhe on the ground and they're all kind of like connected with each other.
Yeah.
Friday night.
If you notice the clouds are moving and when the sun comes out and it starts to like go over, like the sun goes over, they go out of the shade.
Yeah.
They kind of like roll away from the shade. Mm-hmm. So I think that the sunlight and the heat, well, that it's learned to survive in the heat, but maybe the sunlight kind of, they don't like
it. Well, like when it's in like when they go into the museum, there's a couple that are like dried up.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
when they go down into their like secret passageways, like why are those people dried up? Like what happened? Did they like.
Well, I feel like they still need to eat, right?
They're decomposers.
Just dying out.
Yeah.
I guess,
or maybe they got injured and then the body just couldn't.
I think it's just a real curious thing, especially because like this thing is all interconnected, right? It's like a hive type idea. Let's call it Awa from Avatar, but it's all interconnected somehow. So
I see you.
Yeah, but that's what I'm meaning is like, what happens if they step on these dried guys? Why don't they send like? There's got to be some sort of boop. Do it. I don't know the answer to that, but I'm just curious.
My guess is some sort of like, you know. You have something dead, like antlers or whatever. You have something dead, and it's going to just slough off.
Oh, okay. It's not connected anymore.
It wouldn't be connected because, I mean, if we're talking like fungus decomposers, they're going to be consuming dead organic matter. So as soon as there's no more dead organic matter, it cannot survive.
Because they're, I think about the one scene where he's like against the wall and like poof, out, so maybe it just sucked him dry and spread a little bit and died type thing maybe. I don't know. Sorry, that's just a question I had.
I want to jump back to the scientist scene because I absolutely, this is one of my favorite scenes, honestly, with the world expanding and showing kind of how this fungus works. I loved the autopsy table part where she's laying there and she walks in and the army guys haven't told her a thing. They want her to like find what they have found so that they have a second opinion that isn't biased or whatever. And she walks in and she looks at the bite and she cuts it open and you see the fungus like come out of the cut. It doesn't bleed. It doesn't like react. It just like opens up and it looks like kind of like a like cotton like that kind of comes off.
Looks like the tail of the Avatar people.
It's so cool. Oh, it?
No, but that's what I'm seeing
but
here.
At
that's
the
what
same
I'm saying.
Time, he has a point. The little thingy.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be like a troll here, but that's what it looked like to me.
I'm just every episode. It's Shrek. It's Avatar. Every episode.
Next week, I'm throwing in Warcraft. But no, that's a beautiful scene though. Like it's actually a curious thing. Like.
But it brings up the question, yeah. like how does this fungus work with the body? Like, are these people still alive? And it's just, like, infecting the brain, and they are just kind of gone crazy, but they're still kind of conscious on the inside? Mm-hmm. Or is the fungus killing them, and it's completely taking over all the muscle, like, the muscles, and the fungus is making them move? Like, it just brings up these questions of just, like, or and answers a little bit, you know, of how this fungus kind of affects the body and affects the people.
It seems like a nervous system, actually, is what I was kind of imagining.
Kind of gets
when
in
you
and
go
like does all
because like if you've seen like the picture of the peeled nervous system, that's what it reminded me of because it was going through like right where they cut it and all this, and then like I think I saw a note on yours, and I'm not going to take this, but there was a kiss at one scene where the fungus stuff kind of comes out of the mouth, and it's kind of like that was a pretty grody scene to be honest with you, but I thought it was fascinating. That like the fungus is coming out to like take over type thing, and so like it is curious. Like, is the fungus that's infected the living organism that's moving from host to host, or is it just a larger piece of something I don't understand? I agree with you. That was a very fascinating thing.
It's so cool. It's just like a little touch that they didn't have to do. You know, and it's just and they don't over explain anything. It's just like you see it happen. It's like, oh well, how does that actually work? Like, and it makes you like really think about it. How does that affect people and affect the bodies and. We can talk about the kiss if you want to, but we can't skip over my favorite scene of the entire series so far.
What is it?
Is it episode 2?
Yeah.
Am I allowed to guess?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know?
It is when... Is it in the hotel?
No, it's after the hotel.
Oh, is it the scene where they first meet the Clickers?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, so good. They nailed it.
That was like the one I wanted to talk about in this episode.
Go for it, man.
Oh, just, I mean, you were the one who brought it. I didn't want to steal your thunder.
I'm just going to swoon and swoon over it.
If it's your favorite one, then I want to hear you swoon
scene.
And swoon.
Let me tell you.
Can you do that again? Right? Love.
No, it's just, this is the perfect way to, like, introduce these monsters. Like, they took their time with it. They set it up. And they did the classic horror thing where they don't show the monster too fast. Like, for the first, like, what, couple of minutes, all you see is, like, in the backgrounds. Like
when you hear it first, right?
Yeah, you hear that. That iconic noise, the only noise that beats the clicker noise is the predator noise, which is almost the exact same
very
thing.
Very similar.
It's just like perfect. And so they just like take this time to like establish this dread and this terror before you even get to see what it is. And then you just stick with Joel and Ellie. You don't and see what's going on from like their perspective up until that moment where you like she gasps and it just jumps in your face and you see the monster from the video games and it looks exactly like it and it moves exactly like the video games and it's all done practically, which is the best part of it all. It just looks so good. I loved that entire scene. They just leaned so hard into the horror aspect of it all. And that's exactly what I wanted from these clicker moments. And if you notice, like we haven't seen another clicker since. It's been two more episodes and like we've kind of moved past them. I mean, kind of, like we're focusing on the people stuff. So I'm just glad they took their time and paid attention and really put some thought and effort into this moment that I've wondered what would look like for so long, you know, and they just nailed it perfectly. Loved it.
Well, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I heard that they got the voice actors from the game
correct.
To be the people who played the clickers.
I don't know if they were the actual actors. I don't know. I think they might have just done the sound, but I'm not entirely sure.
I do know for sure that the people whoever did end up doing it is that they studied the game meticulously.
Yeah, they were fans.
Yeah. I heard that, definitely. Yeah. So the people who did it. Right. So they got the people who were the voice actors to do the sound. right? I remember hearing this now. And then the people who actually played the clickers were fans of the game and went even further and just studied so that they could get all of those movements, like, just so down cool. specifically.
They nailed it.
And I also, you know me, as a huge horror lover, I did love this scene yeah. and just the horror aspect of it and how they did it and how they shot it and how it also, without even talking, gives you information about the creatures, right? Obviously, like, he does the whole thing, like, oh, they can't see you, but they can hear you. But just, like, you really end up learning, like, how real that is, right? Like, Joel, at that one point, he's, like, trying to reload his gun, right? And then he hears the one, and then, because it kind of zooms into him behind this thing, and then it pans out, and you see him turn the corner, and it's right there, and I freak out. Joel doesn't freak out. He's fine. He shines a flashlight right in his face. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, and it just, it can't even, like, see that, right? It's just sitting there. It was like, oh, okay, like, I get it now. Like, I understand a little more about it. And then, excuse me, then when they're trying to get away and they're slowly crawling on the ground and she just hits that glass and you're like, oh no. And there's no delay. It just goes up and the clicker comes crashing over the table. Oh my gosh, dude.
Just immediately.
What a thrilling scene to watch.
I actually just read this and I don't know if it's true. Maybe you game folk know this, but there are different varieties of infected people, right? So a clicker is a type of infected that's different from the rest and it takes time to develop into something.
Yeah,
so did they talk about this in the show? I don't know, but it was kind of crazy.
They reference it.
They're referencing it and they're like getting to stuff from what I've...
Like Ellie kind of says a couple things where she's like, is it true that there are some out there that can see like bats that have been infected for a long time or something like that? And then
she mentions... Something about echolocation or something. And then she's like...
The ones that explode.
Wait, are there flying fungus bats?
No.
Okay. So, sorry.
I wish.
I was like, damn.
No.
Okay,
no. Just like they can see like that's with like echolocation.
Oh, okay.
Is that what the clicking's for?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how fun.
So you got, just to recap real quick, you got runners, which are the, like, fresh zombies.
The ones that you see in episode 2 that come after them after they communicate.
Oh, okay.
They can still see and run and like... So they come. And then after a little while, they turn into clickers, which lose their eyesight.
Well, you got stalkers. I don't know if you want to go into, like, all of them. I
forgot about the stalkers.
Stalkers are the ones that will hide.
Oh, yeah.
I hate those them the suck. Most.
And we haven't Sounds seen them terrifying. Yet, right?
No, I don't know if they'll, like, use them in the show. It doesn't make as much
They're
sense.
They're kind of the same thing as a runner, except for they don't wander. They just hide in a corner for you to come around the
and
corner.
And you can't,
and
like,
you.
Hear them.
It's terrifying.
It's awful.
Yeah, I would be dead already.
I feel like that's something that they had to put in the game for just, like, a mix-up. Mix it up. Yeah. Just a mechanic.
Yeah. I agree. And then you got clickers, and then you have bloaters, which are, like, really, really big. And in the game,
they,
like...
get a glimpse of it in the trailer.
And
do
in
they
the game,
explode?
They, like, explode, and they shoot spores out
Is that
out
what's
everywhere.
Under the ground?
No, yeah, so. That's what I was saying. I was going to say, it was, like, ask you, like, is that what they were, like, oh, no, this is coming? And do you remember, Casey, in the fourth episode where,
and
like, the,
like,
ground moves?
And
oh,
she's like,
yes!
And let's like, not tell anyone yet.
Yeah.
Because I'm an idiot.
That's what I thought it was, but I was like, I didn't know.
I don't know either. I don't know.
Maybe not. But
I assume
it would be something that's like on a bigger scale, though, right?
It's got to be.
Right. Which, I mean, just talking to a couple friends that have played the game, they're a little bit worried that it's like that big of something underneath there, like an ultimate boss that that wasn't in the game. That it's like, oh, maybe don't take it too far.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried about that too. Like, don't fall into the video game trap of like making a boss battle. You know, like, use it in a way that's interesting. And I trust these guys to do it. Like, I trust them to kind of subvert our expectations of a boss battle with this and do it in a way that's interesting. But we'll see. Like, we'll see how it goes. I don't know. They subverted my expectations with episode 3, like, extremely. So I'm like, just expect. I don't know what to expect from episode to episode.
Expect the unexpected.
Yeah,
are we there?
are we talking about episode 3 now? Is that what you just brought in?
Do we have any last parting words?
Speaking
for episode
of kisses.
2 and Tess?
I love Tess, and I loved their casting choice for her, honestly. And especially after now I've actually played like the first episode of the game with Tess, I like her so much more than the Tess in the video game. She was just real. She was beautiful in a way that is post-apocalyptic. Like, she was strong, and I just loved her. And I loved being able to see that arc, that mini arc. But it's not even really an arc, because I think it's who Tess actually was right at the very beginning, where she has hope. And so that was just a delight to see from the beginning, because you think you're going into it, it's like, cargo, we're hard asses. We just need a battery and all this stuff. And then finally she's like, well, what if it's true? And then dies saying you need to save her and protect her. It's like, whoa, humanity, where did this come from? And I just really love strong female characters that also show sympathy and love. Like, it's just the best kind of characters are the ones that have conflicting character traits that you would not expect. And being able to show those at the same time, I think that shows a lot of acting chops. And I loved her.
I did, actually. I thought she was a great character.
She was what?
I thought she was a great character. I don't know. Sorry, I started talking. You were the thing.
And I was just trying
apologize.
To... infect the mic.
Yeah, it's weird. Almost like the kiss of death from a Dementor in Harry Potter.
One of the little things that they expanded on between Joe and Tess's relationship was in another just small line that's not in the game of just her telling Joel, I've never expected anything from you. I've never expected you to return the way I feel about you or something like that. That's just like, it says so much about where Joel is at in the moment. Just like so cut off from everything and everyone and just like trying to survive. I don't know. It's just a nice little touch that you don't really get in the game. You don't really you don't really get as much of what that relationship is. Like, you can kind of see there's like a love there, but you don't really get a lot into it. And just with that one little line, it's just a nice little touch of being
like that a lot.
It's
ouch.
It's just a gray area of what is this relationship? How does it work and function to me?
Well, I love that aspect of it too. Cause I'm a huge fan of like post-apocalyptic stuff. And so the fact that there are relationships forming, but they're just so complicated, like almost like a relationship of like convenience because you're who's left. And so I really like that kind of just, we're going to fall together because we get along and there's no one else. And that's all that there is left. You know, I love that too.
So you have like those relationships of just, oh man, like you're who's left. Like, I guess we can make something work. And then you have the relationships where even though you're the only person who's left, you're the person who was meant for the other people.
Aww.
You're the purpose of someone's
that
existence.
Was too cute.
Episode 3. Let's talk about it.
And that's how you transition.
I'm getting better at this. Oh. We've been doing it for 4 years or something. I better be getting good.
Nikki Offer.
My favorite, okay? Episode 3 is my favorite by a long shot. And I think it starts out really good, and there's a lot of interesting, like, because this is where we finally start. And obviously this episode is not about them, and episode 4 is where we really get into Joel and Ellie, right? But we do get a little bookend, right? We get Joel and Ellie at the beginning, and they talk about, they go to the plane, and they talk about that, and you get some interesting perspective and all those things and whatnot. And then we'll talk more about what happens at the end. But episode 3 is Bill and Frank's episode. And let me just say, I was so, so excited for Nick Offerman, right? And
right.
I was so excited. And then I recognized him and I just couldn't put it together. And then my friend finally, Cade, texted me. He was like, oh, dude. He was like, I loved this guy in it. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I've seen him in anything else. He was like, dude,
yes,
you just finished watching The White Lotus.
And you saw a lot of him well.
You sure did.
Don't
sorry,
you
Casey.
Remember?
I know nothing about what's going on, but I'm hoping you're talking about a butt.
We are.
I didn't
spoilers.
Recognize him with his pants.
Or that beard.
I know, he looks so good.
So
we had that same moment too. When the episode ended, I was just like, that's who he was. Oh my gosh. Holy crap, it just clicked.
Wait a minute. The minute he starts speaking in an Australian accent or whatever, he's like, oh, that's who you are.
He's he's one of the characters on White Lotus.
I'm kind of getting that.
Yeah.
I kind of deducted that
first
from the
season,
moment.
First season.
Okay. Yeah. That's all I gotta say.
So obviously I wanna hear your guys' take on. So I watched do you guys watch the little post credit things that they have
every
on HBO,
time.
Right? Where they kinda have the creators, they give you a sneak peek in the next week's episode and then they have the creators
skip
talk them. About this week's right, no spoilers. I think
no spoilers.
Sometimes they give like
that's
too
so
much.
Thank
and so I
you.
Get scared. I'm like, I don't wanna know. Like, just
I stopped watching those after Game of Thrones.
That's smart. That's smart. Yeah. So anyway, so they have the creators who are talking about it, and they say, all right, so when you're making an adaptation like this, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And so basically the idea is if something is really, really good, you want to keep it in there. If there's the chance to make something better, we want to do that. And that's basically what episode 3 was. And obviously I want to hear your guys' take because I don't want to be explaining just what I've learned over like the past like week-ish, right, after watching this episode. But this story of Bill and Frank is very not included in the game. And it's just very vague. Like, there was always like hinted at and the possibility of them having a relationship mentioned in the game. But it was always very off script. And this was just so new and its own beautiful story.
Right? I loved it. I loved it because it was just well done. And I feel like it was the most that they've strayed from the game. And like you said, like it was better. So it just makes me feel like, okay, anything that they include or do differently, it's going to be good.
You have my trust.
You have my trust. Like with, I'm sorry to like kind of jump to episode 4 for just a second. But when they introduce this new female character, that's like this leader of this bandits, you know, I feel like, you know, when new people are watching this show, they're kind of just like, Bill, you know, Frank, like it was good, but these aren't the characters I'm here for. I already had a relationship with Frank, you know, like I wanted to see more Frank. So I kind of feel like I understand how they felt watching that episode. Cause it's like, here's this new character I don't really care about. I don't know. But after seeing what they did with like episode 3, that's just like, it's going to be different, but it's going to be great. And so I'm just like, okay, I care about this person now, and I don't know why, but I do, because I trust what you guys are doing with your characters. It's just so good.
You don't get any of Frank in the game. None. You learn of Frank through notes and comments that Bill makes. The most you see of Frank is his dead body.
I was about to say that you see him dead, right?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he
that's like the original. Like,
it is not a happy ending.
This is spoiler, right? But this is like, that is in the game, the window shot that you get from the end of episode 3, where it kind of like, you don't see him, but it like backs into the window and you know that they're both there.
Oh.
Dead, right? That's what you see in the game, right? Except for you see Frank is dead alone, right?
From whatever. Is that? I don't know. It's been.
It's kind of a nod to like that opening. It's not screen like the exact same the window.
Is that what they do in the game when you find Frank's body? They have the window in that.
No.
Okay, sorry. I thought I heard that. My bad.
Well, that would have been cool though. That's a good idea.
But that ending clip, like, it is a nod to the like menu screen in the game, where you kind of have the frame, like the window frame with the wind and the curtains.
Okay,
it's the perfect place to put it there. Oh no, you're fine. Mm-hmm. You're on the. It's been so long. I'm going to question the game, like my memory of it. So
I had no idea going into it either, because I know like the general story and honestly the spoilers, the big ones, you know, of the game. But I had no idea. Frank, Bill, who are they? And it was really fun to just like sense from like probably the first like 5 minutes of their interaction, I turned to Vince and I go, oh, they're gonna hook up. And then somebody had to pee during the show, so we had to pause it, and I was like, oh, this and this and this. And I remember Vince was like, well, I mean do you want me to tell you? No, I want you just to experience it. And I'm so glad that you did, because it was completely different than what you would have told me. And so it was so fun. Oh, and Nick Offerman, like, of course he is going to win the Emmy for best like performance in a single episode, right? The next day, I watched his part on Gilmore Girls and I was like, Nick Offerman, look where you've come from. Like, it just showed such a wide range, and I just fell for that story and just like his immediate background that you could tell that all he had been through and all that he was immediately, and yet again the complete opposite of what you would expect.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna paraphrase my wife here. I'm not gonna call her like I planned on, but I want to paraphrase her. What was really cool about this episode was, first off, the gay character doesn't die immediately, which is actually a really cool thing. They weren't over feminized, over sexualized, or over whatever is not always typical of queer people, right? And I did not see it coming, to be honest with you. I was kind of like blindsided in a good way of what happened. And I thought it was such a beautiful thing that they were like, in times of this, there are still people like this who exist, right? And there are people who need to find relationships people can be with. Because, like, looking at Nick Offerman's character, he had intended just to spend the last of his days alone. And he wasn't going anywhere else. And I thought that that was a really beautiful thing, that he was building something up for himself. And then as, is it Murray, right, is his character? No.
No, sorry, that's the actor's name.
Okay, what's...
The character's name is Frank.
Frank, sorry. But Frank, you know, like, when Frank comes into the thing, like, it was actually such a beautiful thing to kind of see the progression of how the relationship went, that it wasn't just like a, oh, hey, we're gay. Like, this is, we're going to hook up. It was, like, very slow kind of, like, build up into the story of who these people actually are, which was amazing. And then I loved throughout the story, like, how Nick Offerman's character, Bill, right? He just found a purpose and found a reason to stay alive, to keep building, to keep developing, to keep doing things. And to be honest with you, that's what we all would do if we found this person that we loved and we cared about. And so I liked the way they presented it, and I thought that it was something that could bridge maybe people's misunderstandings about queer people living together and being together, and in a really healthy way. So I for one, was a huge fan of it. I thought both actors were so well done. They showed emotion. They showed beauty. They showed weakness, grace, all of the things that you'd expect. And yes, Nick Offerman has come a freaking long ways. Like, it's a beautiful thing. But we have to thank his wonderful wife, Megan Mullally, for bringing him into this, because he actually did not have time to do this. He's like, I don't have no time on the books. Yeah, and
he said he had no time to. They sent him the script because they wanted him to do this part, and he said he had no time to read it.
One day.
And his wife read it, and she was like, there's not a question. Like,
you're doing this.
This is going to get you the Emmy, honey.
Well, what's really cool about, if you've watched Parks and Recreation, his wife, Tammy, the librarian, is actually his wife in real life. That's who his wife is, Megan Mullally. And they're just, like, in real life, they are just crazy, fun, unique. I've listened to their books. I've listened to Nick Offerman's books. And it, like, I could see the exact conversation happening. Like, hun, you have to do this. Like, this is not a no-go. So for me, like, one of the coolest things also, like, you don't really know people. He was a prepper. He was, like, ready for doomsday at any point in time, knew what he was doing and everything. And, you know,
don't tread on me flags on the wall. It just subverts every expectation you'd have of this type of person. Like, you probably know or have an idea of, like, what this type of person would be in your mind. And it just
wasn't the same.
Pulls the rug out from under you in every way.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I think there's a beautiful element in it, that without this pandemic where the whole world is going to die, he would never have been able to live the life that he did.
To live his authentic self. Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. So cool. Also, them rebuilding the town.
I know. Because the boutique. Because I want a boutique.
Yeah.
I want to go shopping.
Yeah. Okay. I want to do things. Yeah.
That's what I love the most, is like, The Last of Us is not about zombies. It's about humanity. Mm. And that's what this episode is about. It's about humanity in every form. And it's about these two guys who couldn't be different from each other, finding a way and a purpose, like you said, to finding a reason to live and a purpose through life, you know? So Frank just doesn't want to survive like Bill does at first. Frank wants to make things better. He wants to build up his block. He wants to meet people. He wants to bring people in, where Bill is just like, no, we're good. We just need the two of us, and that's it. Everyone else, no one else can be trusted. And they just bring out the best of each other, which is really, really cool. And just from like it's an awesome story, but just from like a technical aspect, it's shot so beautifully. Like that shot in the strawberry patch that they have with the sunset coming down between the trees and them just like happy together. Like his little giggle, that freaking
childish.
Yeah, it's just like it's so well done. And just like, this is the difference between an HBO show and anything else, is they will just stop a story, focus on something that's just so well told, and put all their attention and effort into it, and just put it out there for everyone to enjoy. And just it's amazing. Like, it's just so good.
I wanted to be in that strawberry patch moment so badly. I just have to call that out. They made this not just like a, like, it was an experience, not a TV show, this episode. So, like, I know that everyone's obsessed with, sorry, I don't game, I apologize, but Oculus, right? That's the thing, the immersive gaming. That was that show for me. I was there. I wanted to be tasting that strawberry. I wanted you to feed me that thing with your hand. That's what I wanted. Sorry. That was
roll around in those strawberries.
Nick. Don't Yeah, no. Don't roll in this.
I'm actually really loving just like, I guess, the evolution of these streaming services where you start to recognize the same actors, the same writers, the same directors over and over within these different, you know, original shows produced by that. Because I think that one of the funnest Easter eggs in like the whole show are all of these people who did the voice acting in the video game, and they're able to come back and be in the show. I loved that. Like all of those different ones. There's like the voice of Tommy, the voice of Marlene, right? Mm-hmm.
I think Ashley Johnson's in it. She's in the trailer for a moment.
Really? What does she have? What part?
She's holding a baby.
What?
So there, I think she might be.
But yeah,
she's holding a baby.
Well, I mean, it's in the trailer.
But don't okay. Don't try to expand.
Okay, I won't. Well, no, I just won't.
I thought you were gonna go further.
There.
I was like, all right, I don't know who has a baby. Okay.
With like what you said though, like about what Last of Us is about, I also think it's like very much about like what you do for love, right? Like, yeah. And there's even I think they talk about that right in the behind the scenes about what you do for love, even with the fungus and what they do for love, and that's where they brought in the kiss and then what
is that kiss a part of the video game?
The way that they transfer is not the same in the video game. Like it does transfer through bites and everything, but there's not these like tendrils that come out and try to
tendrils. That's a good word.
That like come out of the mouth and stuff. It's mostly like it's through bites and through pollen, not pollen,
airborne
spores.
So there's a lot of times in the game where like when you go into these like dank pits or basements or whatever, that they'll stop and they'll put like gas masks on, because if you inhale too much, then you'll get infected.
So these guys sound like an alternate version of the Flood from Halo kind of type thing.
Yeah, kind
of. Oh, low-key.
Yeah.
Kinda. Well,
yeah.
Like except for not face huggers and alien. Not in this.
I understand. I was going to say.
New question for Paige, though.
Blood
really
and Halo.
Yeah, Halo. You should play Halo.
I have. Pistol whipping.
Oh, good, good, good. But here, really quickly, Paige. Your thoughts. You had this relationship with Bill. You knew this whole thing. How was it for them to expand out the universe for you of like, this is his private life. This is who he really was and how he was. Like, they took it in their own way, and you said, I trust them, but did this, I know you said, like, I trust you and all this, but, like, how was it for you being like, this is a good expansion of the universe?
It was really good, because, like, in the game, Bill's more of, like, a cautionary tale, I feel like, for Joel. It's like, if you don't let anybody in, if you don't compromise, if you don't love, you're going to end up being this person who's grumpy and alone and just has no joy or purpose in his life whatsoever, just surviving to survive. And I feel like Joel still learned that lesson that he needs to let people in. He needs to care about people. He needs to protect, you know, from like the letter. Mm. So like, I don't feel like the lesson was lost with Joel that Bill served in the game. And I just loved seeing somebody win in this universe. You know, like you don't see people win in this world. So it's just nice to see that kind of like breath of relief, kind of almost.
They live their life and they end their life on their own terms, which is just not the case for almost anybody that lives in this entire world.
So I love that comment, by the way. And that was kind of what I wanted to kind of finalize on is like for my thoughts for this is like they took the moment. Like I loved, like if you notice at the ending of these two's life right there, they have the same meal, same wine as they did on the first like meal together, and they just went out on their own terms and kind of like I loved it. And that's all I want to say is like thank you, Paige, for sharing, but also good call out, Josh, on the finale of that, because that's how I felt.
I have two other things I want to mention really quick, and one of them I've already posted on Twitter and on my Instagram, and it's a plug for another one of my favorite movies. If you liked Nick Offerman singing beautifully and just being an amazing actor and acting his absolute ass off, and you haven't watched the movie Hearts Beat Loud, I a million times recommend it. You've also seen it, right, Casey?
I was gonna plug. Yeah, same. I want to confirm what you said, Elder. Like it's gonna be great.
Oh my gosh, he did not have to.
Yes, hey,
your Utah show.
Yes, yes. Stop. Sorry, Josh, I had to do it.
That just, if you liked what Nick Offerman did, because that was also one of my favorite scenes, just that first moment where like I feel like a lot of people just from watching people watch this, like, kind of had a progression. Some people, like, right from the moment, they were like, oh, like, these two, huh? For me, it was a little bit later, like, when he poured the wine and he was like, oh, man, who knows how to pair a rabbit with a bourgeois or whatever it was. I was like, oh. That's where I was like, oh, I see.
And then I some hope people. That caught your face in that. That was like, I stared you in the eye for that moment. I felt the heat. Right
that
there.
Is where I felt the heat. And then for some people, like, because I watch like reaction videos on YouTube, who, like, when they watched this, they were like oblivious. They were like, okay, cool. And then when they kissed, they were like, I was like, oh my goodness. And so, but then when Nick Offerman sung, it was just so beautiful and so tender, and you could just feel the pain behind it. And you could see it as like, oh, he had someone in his past. But like he said, he was like, there is no, like, girl, there's like not someone I'm singing about. This is just like an important song to me. And Frank just knew it immediately, and they just went from there. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about was...
But also check out Hearts Be Loud.
Yes, Hearts Be Loud.
Okay, sorry.
Very, very good movie.
Indie film?
Yes.
It's on Hulu, I think.
I don't think it is right now. I tried what? To find it because I wanted to watch it.
I bought,
like,
it.
You have to, like, rent it for like $2 or something. So do that.
We own it if you want to borrow it ever again.
There you go. But then the other thing I wanted to talk about was how, because they tell their own beautiful story that gives you an expansion on the world of Bill and Frank. And it's incredible and it's heartwarming. And I, like, bawled my eyes out when it happened and when it was ending, right? And then what it ends up meaning to the real story. Because I feel like it's beautiful and that can just live in its own little thing and go forever. But when they bring it into the show through the letter, right? And all of the things that he ends up saying in that letter is so beautiful also for their tale, but also for Joel and for what it means. So my favorite things that he said in that letter, obviously besides, like, his hilarious, like, first part, like, oh, this is Joel because everyone else would have died. He. Like, he, you know, he wrote he. Like, he wrote that out. But then just my favorite, what he wrote, right? When he says, like, I used to hate the world and everyone in it. And just, like, you could tell that by his character at the beginning. Like, and he said, I was happy when everyone died, right? He was like, I was super excited. He's like, but then I found out I was wrong. There was someone who was worth saving. So that's what I did. I saved him. And then it just gives you that close up of Joel's face, hearing those words. And he's like, that's what I do. I saved him. Those are what people like you and me are meant to do. We're meant to save people, take care of them, and God help any motherfuckers who get in our way, right? And you just see his face, and he literally doesn't do anything. His face doesn't move. But somehow you can see the realization still on his face, him just sitting there and knowing what he has to do and what needs to happen. And it is sad to, like, not like, I'm not trying to minimize this part, because it was also beautiful when he was like, oh, take everything I have, use it to keep, and he stops and you see, keep Tess safe. And it's so sad, but you know that that's just transferred now and yeah. It's different. And it's just this, like I said, I love this show so far, and I'm so excited to see where it goes, especially just not knowing the story in its completion. I know there's so much more to it, but just this own side story that got expanded upon, and the way it made me just absolutely bawl and just feel so many things, I loved it so much.
Well, I liked, really quickly, and this is stepping a long ways back, I'm not transitioning again, I apologize to everyone, but the opening of this episode when they're evacuating the town, right, and he's sitting in the basement, what does he say? Like, I can't remember, but essentially,
not today.
Not new world.
New world order people or whatever. Because he's like the type of guy that was like holed up in a basement. I guess this was 2004, right? Like,
oh, he was living for this moment.
Y2K moment, you know, like all those people. And you're like, this guy was born for this. Like, that was my moment at the first of the show where I was like, whoa, I know people like this where I grew up. And the beginning hasn't happened of the end. So they're still sitting down there waiting. But What a really unique and cool episode. Does anyone have anything else on this one before we transition into actually my favorite episode?
Ooh.
Four?
Number four.
Tell me why you loved it.
So I'm going to fall back to a movie I watched last year that Vince and Josh felt was vastly too long, called Avatar, The Way of Water. Hold on here.
I will let you. You've probably planned it.
I have.
I'm ready.
But it was like part of that movie. The reason it was 3 hours long is because it was a world building film in some ways, right? This episode was like the longest feeling episode to me. However.
Four?
However.
No.
It felt long.
Opposite. You said it felt we felt long. The complete opposite.
I'm pretty sure it's the shortest episode.
Is it? Opposite.
It felt long.
The credits rolled, and I was like, wait.
That's true. I felt that way, though.
It also cliffhangs you super
so hard.
It does. It does. But, like, it felt like it was building a very slow moment here. And I think that that's real of actual situations that we live in sometimes. Like, you don't just wake up in the morning and, like, best friends with someone, or you don't let down your wall, right? Like, it takes time. And I loved how they showed, and Josh kind of highlighted some of this on the ride over. So, Josh, I'm not going to steal your thunder. But what I loved was, like, oh, go, like, they're pumping the fuel, like, they're siphoning the fuel out of the dead cars, and he's like, go do something, get out of here, like, I need to do this in peace, and she's like, okay, well, you asked for it, like, it was an uncomfortable moment for them, because she's like, what do I do here, so I'm gonna read these jokes, and I'm gonna, what's the word, like, push my kind of humor life onto you, right, and so she tells the, what is it, puns, and then, like, the fear that she had when they were camping, and like how it's like a long night that he stays up defending the camp. And like, you kind of see him step back into a father role here a little bit, where he is a dad again of a teenager. Cause like, if we really think about it, and I don't know the series as well as you guys do. So if I'm wrong and I'm just blowing smoke out of my ass here, just let me know. But like, he's like stopping. He's just picking up where he left his daughter, essentially. Like, it's about, the child's about the same age. He's kind of just remembering, like, this is what it's like to actually be a father, to listen to things you're probably not the most interested in, to kind of, like, slowly rebuild things. And that's what I felt like this whole episode was about. Yes, there were times it was moving fast, but for me, overall, it was a slow world-building, relationship-building episode. Did it feel long? Yes, at times, but I was never, like... it wasn't like that for me. So I'm just explaining it in that way. Like, that's how I felt about it. Sense. And also, I'm never going back to Kansas City ever again.
I'll put it by 2 cents really quick, because I feel like you guys love this episode. Not like, it's not like I didn't like it. I definitely loved it. But because I found something that kind of summarized my thoughts on this episode really well, and I'll say it and then I'll let you guys fawn over it. And so IGN posted their review of the episode, and they just have like a short little blurb, which I was like, yeah, that's like how I felt. So they say, much of The Last of Us episode's 4 duration is spent developing Joel and Ellie's relationship, and the pace is justifiably slowed down slightly in order to let it naturally blossom. A necessary decision to take in to further the impact of future payoffs. So I liked it because it really does, like I said, in episode 4, you got a little bit in episode 3 at the beginning and the end, but in episode 4 is when you're really getting down to Joel and Ellie, which is what this video game is about this relationship and everything that they go through. And so, yeah, like Casey said, it's not just going to be once, like all of a sudden, like, we're best friends, we are meant to be together and go through this apocalypse together. It's slow and it can be weird and just all this stuff, but you just see how these characters start to fit together. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I love that Joel is kind of learning those lessons from Frank and Bill, and kind of, I don't think he's purposely applying them, but it is starting to kind of like show the cracks that he is starting to open up little by little. And he's so hard that it makes that moment when they're laying together and she cracks that joke, and he finally cracks.
I need to ask you a serious question.
And
sorry.
No, it's so good. And he laughs a little bit, just shows just a little bit, which makes her laugh, which makes him laugh even more. And it's just like that moment where it's just like, oh, game over. Like, yeah. These guys are going to be best.
His heart
friends.
Has melted. She's in there. So good.
Bella Ramsey in that episode, though, like, she is so good. Not only does she have like the most impeccable thing, like American accent, but just how she, again, it's just like balance between both like strong and soft, strong and feeling at the same time for me. Like it really just knocks it out of the park when you can see somebody like completely terrified, but yet when she looks into his eyes and he's telling her to run and get in that hole, that she trusts him completely, but is just scared shitless all the time. Can you imagine that life, right? Like,
and you can, in from Joel's perspective too, like in those moments you see him going into dad mode like over and over again, whether he likes it or not. He's like in the campground where she asks like, you know, are we safe here? And he scares her, and then he kind of regrets it when he lays down and comforts her later. And he spends the rest of the night, like, awake and watching, and then drinks nasty coffee the next day, which I have to say I feel represented in that moment when she rolls over and smells that coffee. I was like, she gets it. Coffee's disgusting. Let's drink
well,
her.
It's old, stale, aged coffee. That is the thing, though. That is the thing. Also, the layers of these characters, right? Like, that's what's interesting is we keep learning more and more and more. So we're just like, what's the core here, right? And I'm so curious, like, so, right, like, I've killed before from Bella Ramsey's character. And from, like, sorry, Joel, really quickly. I keep stepping in on this because I'm so excited about it. Like, him not telling, he's like, don't talk about Tess. We don't talk about our past. We don't talk about our stories. Like, all of these are going to be broken down, I feel like. Maybe not perfectly. Maybe not in, like, the one day they're just, like, strolling down now that they've lost their Chevy S10. They're just walking. And he's like, oh, by the way, I had a daughter once. She died. She's about your age. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that there's going to be big, traumatic, ugly experiences in ways that reopen it. Like, why are you such a good caregiver? Why do you care? And, like, I have to do something for blank.
Well, that's, I feel like the creative freedom, honestly. I mean, this, I might get, like, ragged on for this.
Yeah, the internet's a mean place.
Yeah. That you see a lot of with a lot of HBO originals, minus the last two seasons of Game of Thrones, is that they really do follow, like, no, this is what the character would do. And so, like, I see it in second season of White Lotus. I see it in Joel. Like, we might not ever get that from Joel, but that's okay, because we're not just going to do that so we can spoon feed the audience what they want to see or what they expect to see. But I'm going to stay true to this character. And so, and that's another side of Joel that I feel like we got to see, is not his, like, just composed, I know what to do in this moment. He, like, behind that pickup truck is freaking out, and he shows it and we see it, but yet still is very, like, commanding. And, like, what you said, like, jumping into, like, the protective father mode. So I love seeing that.
So this is his dad mode 2000.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's something fun about the differences between mediums. That moment in the game is just an action sequence.
Yeah.
You know, you crash, you get out, you shoot things, then you move on.
You hand the remote over to this one, to save each other.
You did pretty good.
But in a show, like, you see the expression on their faces, the fear, the moment, like, this is not just a fun action sequence for a video game. This is, like, a moment that they could die. You don't get that in the other medium. It's cool.
And it looks like they're going to. Like, how do they come out of that? Yeah.
And even just, like, Brian's death, like, holy crap.
That was heavy.
Because there's so many times where a character will die, even if it's just a side character and it just happens, right? Mm-hmm. And you can move on. But you got to think, like, every time that someone dies, it's, like, a real, actual, like, human dying. Like, later on in this episode, she goes and she shoots that doctor, right? You don't even see him die because it just shows her from the outside. So you're just kind of like, oh, okay, she shot that guy. You don't think about it. But when you are witness to a character's last moments, and not even witness to his face, but just his words, calling out mom, 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 right before he dies.
Right? And you remember his
even
name.
Even though he was about to shoot and kill them, right? It's not like Joel really had a choice. You don't say that Joel did something bad, but you just sit there and you, like, kind of wince a little bit because you're like, oh my gosh, this is this guy's last moment, and he's just calling out for his mom right before he dies. Just the humanity that it brings into it, and just the absolute, you get a further sense of how truly far gone the world is at this point.
I loved that aspect of it, though. That, like, it was so much more stressful for me when they brought humans into it. It gave me such a Mad Max vibe when they showed the run on the front of that, like,
yes,
blazing, like, oh my gosh, these are the people that are chasing down other human beings because they can, and they're going to toy with them by telling them to run on the thing that's about to make them, like, roadkill. Oh, it was so Mad Max to me that I was, like, stressed.
That's what's going to be so fun about the next episode. Yeah. Is, like, they're expanding the world again, and they're giving us backstories for this militia group or whatever they are. Whereas in the game, they're just a bunch of NPCs that come in and you shoot them and you move on to the next story beat. Just an obstacle that you go through. Now they're going to have a backstory. They're going to have a reason for doing these things. They're going to have, like you said, motivations. It's not just a name or whatever. It's, like, actual character development for what's this new lady's name? She was never in the video game. Melanie, yeah. I'm interested to see what her...
I'm holding out hope that I won't...
hate her?
I'm sorry. The, I don't want to
She's
got to
have a reason for doing this. I mean, it's got to be her brother, right?
She's a great character. This isn't black and white.
Henry. Not Henry. Oh, Henry's sorry. The guy she's after. But
so
she's
her brother was Brian? I don't know. I thought that was her...
Brian's the just guy that Ellie shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So her brother is the little baby, like the kid that was drawing the Superman things?
I think her brother died somehow, and I think she blames Henry for it. And that's why she's after him. And that's all I know. Like I said, this is a completely new character giving complete more depth to this situation that they find themselves in.
I just don't think she has the vocal prowess to, like, carry a leading role.
I disagree.
I'm sorry.
I'll gladly disagree with you.
You can 100% disagree.
Why don't you think that, though?
Okay, well, maybe it's because I know and remember her from a little slice of heaven in the early 2000s miniseries days called Rose Red. And she is just like this, like, annoying, hi, and this, and I'm going to go off and do this, and I am the leader of this group, and you will die, and you're going to tell me where Henry is. And I'm sorry. It's the same, like, let's bring up all the other, like, Taylor Lautner, great body, great, that's it. And, but, like, he just doesn't have, like, the vocal.
So here's the interesting thing is you bring up Nick Offerman earlier and talk about him in Gilmore Girls too now, right? But there's an opportunity for this person to step up and do the same thing. However,
shouldn't I already have the idea that she's done that though so far?
Well, I actually liked her. I thought she was great. That's why I'm like here saying
there are moments. There are moments.
But the thing is like there. This is a character who is going to be like. This is a self-preservation role that she's in, actually. It's like she wants to preserve, like, these freaking ripped dudes with freaking guns are like, she's like, we'll deal with that later. Go do this. And she's like, they're doing what she said. That's pretty badass.
I wish I believed it a little bit more.
Well, these things called wolves wearing sheep's clothing, and that's what she is.
Well, if it was cast in a different girl... I think I'd believe it a little bit.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Wow. I don't know her personally. Melanie Lynskey, I really do enjoy your acting in a comedy role.
You suck. That's what she's saying.
No. I'm just saying that I don't believe it so far. It doesn't feel grounded to me yet.
Can we meet back in four more episodes and have a conversation at that point?
I would absolutely love to because I am really hoping that I can put trust in how brilliantly this has been casted thus far and have it be redeemed in the next episode because I saw a glimpse of it when she was like interrogating the doctor, but I lost it after that.
Okay. So, Paige, you had something on this, I feel like.
No, I just, do you guys listen to the Companion podcast by Troy Baker?
No,
I don't. Sorry.
Tell us the deets.
Well, it's Troy Baker's the guy who voiced Joel in the game. And they talked to like Neil Druckmann and the creators and the directors and stuff. And they kind of mentioned like, it is confusing seeing her in this role being like this mom, you know, she just kind of looks like a house mom. And they didn't give much information, but they just said, it's if you're confused, you're supposed to be confused.
Ah. See, and you hate on me when I'm doing exactly what was intended.
I'm not hating on you. I just did a spirited disagree.
I agree to disagree.
I agree with nothing.
I quit this podcast.
Because not everyone, but I definitely felt the same way when I saw her. I was like, mm-hmm. She's supposed to be like this, like spirited leader. But just like what Paige said, like made it like make sense. It's like, yes, it seems like it's not going to be right. Like it seems like she might not be that person, but I feel like. They had the pick of anyone they wanted.
And they wanted her.
Exactly. Right?
They wanted her.
They worked hard for her.
Really?
So I want to know why. So there's got to be something.
So she is the chosen one.
She is the chosen one. Here's the thing. I don't want to – this – when I say it's not the fact that the character's a woman and it's not her look. It is solely based off of the strength and like resonation and groundness of her voice and acting a little bit sometimes. So, I want to come back and be like, dude, I was wrong.
We'll take that as a, you'll be back.
You'll be back soon. You'll see.
We're not copywriting anything. No infringements can be found here. But let's
you
go
gotta stop singing
sing
for that,
Casey. Okay. Yeah. No. I appreciate that. Thank you for disagreeing with me. And it's not like we're causing damage by disagreeing. Okay. Any other thoughts, Vince Man?
No.
Man?
I think I've covered a lot. Lot.
Do we have spoiler-free thoughts and hopes for future episodes?
Yeah, Paige.
Oh, I know it's hard. I was about to say it's hard to keep it spoiled.
Come on, Paige. You got
my lips are.
So
she'll lace it. She'll lace it with spoilers.
A summary and a tweet of your hopes. That's not spoilers.
I hope it's good.
Yeah, that's it.
Well said.
Well done. What about you over here, Alice?
Oh, of things to come. How many episodes are in the whole season?
Nine. There's five more.
And this is kind of already that this is meant to be kind of the halfway point because the first episode was meant to be two, right? Mm-hmm. And
I'm going to pose a question. How am I more attracted to Pedro Pascal in this role than I ever have been ever, even as Oberon, even as Mr. Sexy, like man in the thing, that movie with Nick Cage, the Nick Cage movie.
Casey already said it. I think it was Casey at the beginning of this episode because Pedro Pascal is daddy.
Daddy
to everyone.
Daddy is a state of mind.
It's like, seriously, in the first episode, I was like, oh, look at that. He wearing that t-shirt.
I want to rescind my John Hamm comments about him carrying me across the threshold. Let's put Pedro Pascal in that Huckberry jacket carrying me Casey. Over the river, fording the dangers.
You would never cheat on. If John Hamm was here, would you say that to his face?
No.
I know you would.
I love John Hamm. He's daddy. No, I'm just kidding. Josh's dad listens to this podcast, and I just said that.
Oh my, I forget every time.
Sorry.
My dad will walk up to me, like I'm just like there, and he'll just be like, oh, I was listening to your podcast the other day, and I just like, my eyes go wide, and I was like,
what if
yeah?
Well, it's a good thing we didn't talk about the magazine.
Actually, I wanted to bring that up. She's like, why are the pages all sticky? I was about to say, if it had been me, I would have been like old perfume samples, like because they used to stick the pages. Like I would have been like, crap. But no, that's a great one. Okay.
I want to see a long career for Bella Ramsey. That's
oh,
what
yes.
I'm
yeah.
hitting that.
I have one hope.
Okay.
Okay. So in episode four, they focus on Arkansas, right? Or Kansas?
Kansas City, Missouri.
Arkansas.
Thank you. It was supposed to be Pittsburgh.
Ah,
I just hope they go to Utah.
Yeah.
Wait, yep. Do they go in the game to Utah?
Why though?
Shoot, did I do it? No, they're going across the country.
Did I do a spoil?
They gotta
did
go.
I
to,
do a
spoil?
Actually, I said this to my wife that I hope they actually go to Utah because I would love to see what's happening here. I would love to see what's happening here in a post-apocalyptic world.
Do they? I'll save this for that episode. Sorry, you can cut that out. I remember there's some. Yeah, no, sorry, I won't say anything.
Say it!
Don't I'm right there with you, too. If they don't, I'll be
very disappointed.
I hope
that wasn't, like, a spoiler.
No, it's not. But well, that,
okay.
The whole West Coast is open.
And I don't know if it's The Last of Us, or I don't know if there's something else, where you see, like, a...
Like the Salt Lake
like
Temple,
this
right?
world of Salt Lake City, right? I don't know if it's The Last of Us, I don't know if it's another game. And so I was, like, thinking about the same thing and wanting to see what it would look like in said version. Mm-hmm. But I do know that they filmed... I don't know if it was this... I mean, it's got to be this, right? Because my wife was wondering where they filmed all of this stuff, right? And so she looked it up, and they filmed basically everything in Canada, in Ontario, I think. But they do film, she said, except for they filmed some scenes in Kansas City. And so that had to be like...
I heard they filmed some of it in Alberta, like Calgary.
Oh, no, Alberta was it. Yeah. Sorry, that's what it was.
It's outside of Calgary. And a lot of it you can tell is, sorry, I've been to Canada a few times this year. last year. Yeah. No, I hope they come to Utah. I think it'd be crazy.
For what they do in the game, they very well could do it with CGI backgrounds. Like, they don't need to actually film here. Like, a lot of the stuff that takes place in Utah in the game takes place indoors.
Okay.
There's a couple of scenes that they could do with... Just a green screen in the back.
Stock footage.
All right.
Okay. Well, here's my hope really quickly, though. I hope that we see more of these clicker zombies, to be honest with you. And I kind of want it to be like a Zombieland 2 type thing, that there's a herd of them, like, moving across the West type thing. That would be dope. Yeah, and there's a colony somewhere in the middle that's not what's the government at Fedra?
Fedra.
I want it to be an old Fedra hub turned into like this anarchist community is what I want it to be. But that would be too much of Zombieland 2, and so it probably won't happen, but that's what I want out of it. Something like that.
I want Bill Murray, but I want Bill him to fucking live. Murray. I want Bill Murray to live, damn it.
But Vince, what are your hopes?
No, I am with her. I'd love to see the Utah part of the game. Other than that, I just keep giving me extra. Mm-hmm. Just keep padding out the world and giving me backstory and giving me more. Yeah. That's all I want. Just
give him more.
Keep doing
more.
What you're doing.
I like it. I like it. What about you, Josh? What do you hope for?
I hope for one of the most beautiful stories I've heard in a long time. Because I'm already kind of on that boat, right? You kind of have the many people keep on referring to episode 3 as like an expanded like up, except for in the Last of Us universe, right? Like that beginning scene of Up, except for made longer and just like absolutely gorgeous and making me cry. And I just know that the way that people talk about this video game, it's amazing, not just because of the video game, it's amazing because of the storytelling and the character building and what happens. And so I'm just looking forward to it as someone who doesn't actually know what ends up happening with these characters, but knowing that it's a story that people love, I'm just looking forward to discovering it, right? Like, there's so many people who are, and I love that the way that it builds the world and stuff like that, and I love learning things as it goes along, but obviously as someone who doesn't know where this story actually ends up, I'm just excited that I finally get to experience something that people have loved for so long.
Same. Also, really quickly, did you hear that there is, like, a 2-hour director's cut of the Nick Offerman episode?
No. I need this.
Yeah.
What?
There's like a 2-hour director's cut.
Wait, there's no way it's available already.
It's not available.
I'll say they'll release it later.
Like, but apparently they showed it to like, they did it like to everyone, pretty much HBO is like, hey, here's this that we've done. And like pretty much everyone's like, wow. Like,
they'll release it like a few months after the season's
It'll
over.
It'll be its own film.
HBO
also
Max
express my gratitude for Warner Brothers Discovery for doing this show, because it made my stock in Warner Brothers Discovery go up. So thanks so much for that.
Thank you.
Tina, share,
bit
my friends.
All right. Well, if we got nothing else this week, thank you for joining us, Alice and Paige. We hope you'll come back again, talk about the rest of the series and whatnot.
I can talk about probably the whole game without having to worry about spoilers.
Really?
I did pretty good, all things considered.
And then all of a sudden you'll have to stop her from talking about The Last of Us 2, because I know everything about Last of Us Part 2 because of Paige needing to share the story.
Yeah. I need to talk about these stories, guys. And I'm so glad this show's out, because now I can talk to non-gamer people about it and they'll know what I'm talking about.
I'm really happy that I'm able to participate in this story as well without having to play it, because I got so bored.
Well, really quickly, Paige, what has been your favorite moment that they've built from the game that was like perfectly synchronized with the game into the series? Like,
there's so much. Like that magazine, whole conversation, absolutely 100% lifted from the game.
Really?
Like, there are so many scenes that have just been directly pulled word for word, almost shot for shot from the game. And all of those moments just
melted your heart?
Make me happy.
Oh.
I love that. Why mess with a good thing?
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, they did it, so why change it just for the sake of changing it?
Yep.
Because then you get Bill and Frank episodes.
That's true.
Well, I mean in the sense that, well, you know, I know what you're saying. Like, what's available is available, and they're going to use it, which is good, you know?
They should have called it Bill and Frank's Excellent Adventure.
And
with that, we're closing out the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us once again here at the Pause Rewind Play podcast, and we'll catch you next time.